President Trump told Congress on Wednesday that his administration has created a deregulation task force inside every government agency. And last week, his chief strategist, Steve Bannon, raised eyebrows when he said this at the Conservative Political Action Conference.
If you look at these cabinet appointees, they were selected for a reason, and that is the deconstruction. The way the progressive left runs is if they can't get it passed, they're just going to put it in some sort of regulation in an agency. That's all going to be deconstructed.
The idea of deconstructing the so-called administrative state was a hallmark of President Trump's campaign, but there's also precedent for this. Historians Brian Ballow and Ed Ayers are co-hosts of the podcast Backstory, which brings historical perspective to events that are happening today. Guys, welcome back.
Thanks very much.
It's great to be here.
And let's start with looking at what Steve Bannon is saying there. Ed, how do you interpret this idea of deconstructing the administrative state?
So deconstructing, obviously, not just dismantling, but some ways destroying.
Driving a stake through the heart.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the administrative state, you'd be surprised to know that Brian Ballow is actually the leading historian of this subject, and I'm not kidding. And so as much as it pains me to give up a nanosecond of airtime, I'm actually going to ask Brian to explain what the heck is the administrative state and why would we want to deconstruct?
Oh, hold on, Ed. Let me just replace my pocket protector first. I just have to say that many presidents, and they're not all Republicans, they're just determined to take apart this behemoth, the administrative state. And probably the most famous one is Ronald Reagan. Reagan said that government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem, and he was going to dismantle that government. Well, long story short, he failed to do that. He built up the military to a much greater status, more people in it, and actually more employees after the end of the Reagan administration. And to achieve his objectives, he did some of the very same things that Trump is doing to achieve his. What Ronald Reagan really wanted to dismantle was the welfare state, and he had limited success in doing that. So there's a long history of presidents coming in saying they're going to take on the bureaucracy. What they really mean is they're going to try to shift the emphasis of where those bureaucrats are going to work and how they're going to spend their time towards achieving objectives that presidents want to achieve.
Well, and what about presidents on their way out? We know the famous speech that Dwight Eisenhower gave in 1961, his farewell address to America. Let's listen to a little bit.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
Now, you say he said that, but in fact, he didn't really do that.
Well, in fairness to President Eisenhower, he did try hard. He was what we would call a deficit hawk today. He tried so hard to balance the budget. And until 1957, Eisenhower did a very good job of keeping down military spending. He ended the Korean War, and he was able to keep a lid on military spending. And then, Ed, what happened in 1957?
I believe there were rockets launched by other people.
That's exactly right. The Soviet Union launched Sputnik, and Americans just freaked out, and especially Democrats. They said, you know, we're not spending enough. The Russians are getting ahead of us.
There's a missile gap.
There is a missile gap, and actually that's one of the reasons that John F. Kennedy beat Richard Nixon in the 1960 election. But poor Eisenhower continued to argue for balanced budgets, but basically a Democratic Congress steamrolled him and military spending went way up. And regardless of spending amounts, Eisenhower presided over the construction of the military-industrial complex.
This is also the second time this week that we have played that exact clip from Dwight D. Eisenhower on Here and Now, because just the other day, the Trump White House said that they wanted to increase the military budget by $54 billion, or about 10%. Doesn't sound like his warning has been heeded at all.
Let's play it again, Jeremy.
Well, here's the thing that I think we might want to think about is that Steve Bannon, chief strategist for President Trump, argues that these analogies with the past are irrelevant, Brian, because we are living in a time of redefinition of American history. And these other precedences or lack of precedent is not really...
Hold on. How are we redefining things?
Well, because we're coming up on the fourth turning of American history.
Oh, is that the warning I have on my calendar?
So, Jeremy, I don't know if you've heard about this.
Well, yes, he thinks there's going to be another war.
Well, he is very much influenced by this book called The Fourth Turning, written by the guys who invented the concept of millennials. And his idea is, the idea of this book, is that American history is determined by the succession of generations, and that American history can be broken up into 80-year periods, and they point out, isn't it spooky that there's exactly the same amount of time between the Declaration of Independence and the Civil War, and the Civil War and
Ooh.
World War II? You telling me that's an accident? I think not. It's the way that generations succeed themselves and shape those who follow. And at the end of each of these 80-year periods, what do we have? At the end of the first 80 years, the Civil War. At the end of the next 80 years, World War II. How long has it been since World War II? We're coming up on the time for another war.
I'm doing the math. That's scary.
Let me just bring us back around to the original point, which was deconstructing the administrative state.
Right.
Because I know that you wanted to talk about something that happened a long time ago, back in the 1870s, the dismantling of Reconstruction.
Yeah, if you think about the one time that the federal state suddenly surged into activity, doing the biggest thing the American state has ever done, which is end the largest and most powerful system of slavery in the modern world through a massive war, and then create a completely unprecedented national bureaucracy and enforce it with troops on American soil, there's nothing like Reconstruction, which just happens to rhyme with deconstruction, you'll notice.
Right.
And so if you think of this cyclical model that Bannon has, that should have been a cleansing time, that the wars come along and destroy what is bad. Well, slavery is obviously bad, but for generations, Reconstruction was understood as a great travesty. And I actually find it hard to believe that the same people who talk about deconstructing the administrative state today would think it was a great idea to have this federal power then. So my point is that the cyclical model just doesn't hold up. So does this make sense to you, Jeremy?
Yes, but I have to bring us to the most important topic of the day, which is Judge Wapner.
Oh, yeah, that's heavy.
The People's Court.
Judge Joseph Wapner died a few days ago, and of course people remember from TV in the 80s and 90s, the trail he blazed.
Both parties in the suit have agreed to dismiss their court cases and have their dispute settled here in our forum, the People's Court.
Now, Brian, you say Judge Wapner's courtroom TV show harkened back to the days of the 19th century.
That's right. Back in the 19th century, if you had a legal dispute, you went to the local judge, you went to a justice of the peace, you might go to a magistrate in a city like Chicago, and the judge would often decide whether, you know, you had voted the right way in the last election in Chicago, what he thought about your cousin. It was a very common sense. There wasn't a lot of legal mumbo jumbo.
Or law.
Or law. But it was very direct. And I think that, you know, by the 1980s, we'd become such a litigious society and so specialized in judicial concepts. And also, Jeremy, that judiciary, that third branch of government, it is so removed from the lives of
most
Americans.
They dress in robes.
They dress in robes. We don't really see. So Judge Wapner, the People's Court, you know, he gave millions and millions of people. Do you know that at the peak of his popularity, something like 60% of Americans knew who Judge Wapner was, but only, I don't know, 9% of Americans knew who the Chief Justice was. It was Rehnquist, by the way.
And Judge Judy, by the way, is still, I think, the most highly paid person on television today.
Yeah, she beat Judge Wapner soundly. They were on the TV at the same time, and she came up. So what did she have that he didn't?
Well,
Yeah, that Jeremy stole my line. I mean, she really had very cutting, biting kind of sense
still
of
has.
Humor. Still has. That's right. That's what I – Judge Wapner actually had a kind of decorum to him.
Historians Ed Ayers and Brian Vallow, they are the co-hosts of the podcast Backstory, which brings historical perspective to events that are happening today, including television shows like The People's Court. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you, Jeremy. A lot of fun.
We'll be offering the verdict in just a moment. It's Here and Now.